The Tom Woods Show, episode 2245.
Prepare to set fire to the index card of allowable opinion. Your daily dose of liberty education starts here. The Tom Woods Show.
Hey, all you old timers out there from the Ron Paul 2008 campaign, you may remember my friend Larry Lepard, who spent $200,000 of his own money on full-page newspaper ads in support of Dr. Paul. Well, Larry has had an uncanny way with money over the years, and he made a presentation to my paid membership on how to insure yourself against currency debasement. That is to say, how to survive inflation. Well, I took that presentation out from behind the paywall, and I'm making it available to the general public for free. Check it out at tomwoods.com/Larry. Hey, everybody, Tom Woods here. It's Michael Heiss with us today. Haven't talked to Michael on the air, at least, in quite some time, but he's an idea man. He's both action-oriented and an idea man. Very, very rare to find both of those in the same person. And he's got a really compelling plan forward for what he wants to do on the local level. And I think we ought to hear him out because it makes perfect sense to me and I endorse it wholeheartedly. So, Michael, welcome back.
Thanks for having me, Tom. Always an honor to be here.
All right, look, let's start off with just a little bit of a recap on the subject of the quote-unquote takeover of the Libertarian Party. Because the old guard, the people who measure success by New York Times respectability, are all up in arms that, oh my goodness, the Libertarian Party messaging is too edgy now. Which is a nice way of saying that before, it was too blue-pilled. It was too, oh, what a bunch of jokers who are mistakenly imposing these policies that have these unintended consequences. It's not 1957 anymore. You know, enough's enough. This is not The Freeman, published by the Foundation for Economic Education, which was a great publication as far as it went. But now we have to go farther than that. So assess the situation for us right now.
Well, the Libertarian Party's messaging has gone back to principle, and it's gone back to the radical principles that founded the party itself. And sticking to the truth as opposed to watering down for political expediency. And the result of that has been an absolute explosion in our social media, the party's social media. I think they've had about 30,000 new followers on their Twitter in the past 3 months or so. We've had an influx of new members, an influx of money. And for the first time, perhaps in the history of the party, now that we have taken over the party, we have developed and are developing an actual political strategy. So that is new. And it was kind of the goal of the Mises Caucus the entire time, is identifying that the democratic process that governs the Libertarian Party results in constant turnover on the leadership, which then makes it very, very difficult to have and carry out a long-term strategy. So that if we organize ourselves in such a way as to maintain control of that party, we can therefore expand the timeline to carry out a plan and see what we can do with this thing in a focused manner in the 10-year time frame, 20-year time frame, as long as it takes to achieve freedom in this country. So we're very, very excited about that. The Libertarian Party, I think, stands to be perhaps the only institution in the country, and I challenge anybody to correct me here, but it might be the only institution in the entire country that has gone from being woke to being unwoke and de-wokeifying as an institution or organization in the country. And I think that certainly ought to be a white pill for libertarians around the country.
Let's talk about now what the next step is, because I remember you trying to let the troops know, probably anticipating that some people would drop off in their activism once the deed had been done, that in a sense, the quote-unquote takeover was kind of the easy part. You know, obviously not easy, but compared to the hard work of, okay, now we have to actually go and do something and prove ourselves and advance the message. You know, there was a concern that maybe people would not be as gung-ho for that as they are for the, frankly, the thrill that comes from being told, hey, the party is whoever shows up and then all our people show up and win. Okay, there's something thrilling about that. But sometimes rolling up your sleeves and doing the grunge work that needs to be done, it's not as glamorous. So you were saying we have to keep our eye on the ball with regard to what we now do going into the future. So you've come up with, this is another product of that Michael Heiss brain, Operation Decentralized Revolution. So talk to me about that.
So yeah, this is the next step. Like you mentioned, the takeover of the Libertarian Party was always step one. We had to rescue the brand of the Libertarian Party in order to make it something that small L libertarians, philosophical libertarians, whether in the party or not, we did this for you. We wanted to make the party something that you could identify with, something that you could be proud of, and something that you would actually consider joining. And then from there, we have to take the party and actually do something with it. And that's where we're at now. So the victory, the thrill of the victory is here. We've got the Ron Paul endorsement. And now it's time to, in the words of Hans Hermann Hoppe, do what must be done. And that's a reference to a talk given by Hoppe on political strategy. And I will say that our political strategy is very, very much so influenced by that talk. So what we want to do is you look at these midterms and not much change coming. And I know that there's a lot of people who are upset at the lack of a red wave and the Democrats haven't been repudiated in the way that they ought to be. The COVID regime has not been repudiated in the way that it ought to be. But the issue with that is that it's not just the governors that were engaged in this draconian behavior. It was your city council members. It was your mayor. It was your sheriff that allowed this stuff to happen. So we really, I think, need to take a step back and perhaps humble ourselves in what we're going to have to do and how long it's going to take to achieve freedom in this country and to roll back the state or decentralize the state, whatever have you. So our political strategy, we're calling it Project Decentralized Revolution. And this is basically taking the Libertarian Party and doing something that we consider to be both radical yet also realistic. So what we want to do is we have a campaign that we have launched called Run as Libertarian. And you can go to runaslibertarian.com and sign up. And what this is our effort to recruit, train, and support candidates to run specifically for city council, mayor, school board, sheriff, judge. So it's realistic in the sense that given that we're a third party, we're not immune to political reality. We observe political reality as a third party. So we know that we're not in a position to win Congress or Senate or state senator, these things. And we don't want to be dishonest with people. We want to level with people. So we want to focus on this level where the Libertarian Party can and does win. In fact, 16% of all candidates that ran at the local level just this year won as Libertarians. And that's where all of our victories come from. So we want to scale that and take it from being a quarter of the candidates that ran this year running for local office to get that to 50, 60, 70% of the candidates that run as Libertarian running at this local level. So if you sign up, we are then routing these candidates to training, both with the Leadership Institute, as well as in-house training from Mises Caucus members who have already won these types of seats. Now, the idea here is that, again, these are realistic seats that you can win, and we do win, but they're also radical in that you kind of get a 1-2 punch out of these seats. You know, if you win a city council seat, not only can you effectively work to cut spending at the local level or keep taxes in check at the local level or introduce freedom-oriented or nullification-oriented bills, but you can nullify the state and the federal government. And we observe this all of the time. Look at how the left primarily did marijuana legalization. They did that by decriminalizing at the local level, which then turned into a conversation of decriminalizing at the county level, which then became a conversation of legalizing at the state level. And the reality of the situation is that marijuana or drug laws is just one of very many things that you can do this with. Basically, anything that is not explicitly in Article 1, Section 8 of the Constitution, this is eligible for. So this can be gun control, this can be drug laws, this can be surveillance state technology, anything that's not in Article 1, Section 8. So you can let your imagination run wild on how much you can actually affect your locality by getting in there and really grappling with it and being a thorn in the side and gumming up the works of the feds and even the state government where need be. And furthermore, again, I see there's a lot of people who are upset at these results with the midterms, and I understand that. But I actually think that we're really perhaps undervaluing all of the good stuff that's happening. If we accept the premise that there's a level of truth to the idea of politics being downstream from culture, well, what do you see when you look at the culture? I see a lot of pushback against wokeism and the state control that that calls for. I see Disney losing millions of dollars. I'm seeing sheriffs that were coming out and being against the COVID regime. I'm seeing that there's a reason why there's get woke, go broke as a saying, because that is what happens. People are not investing in these ideas. It's being put upon us. And if politics is downstream from culture, I don't buy this premise that is being foisted upon us by our woke overlords that culture is something that is imposed from the top down, from academia, from Hollywood, from pop culture. I don't buy that. I think culture predates the technology that has allowed this facade to be put up by a very wide margin. I actually think that culture is something that comes up from the family and through the community in any real and organic sense. So if you're out there and you're running a real local race, you're going to be mixing it up with the culture in a very organic sense. So we can plant these seeds and over time make it so that there is no universality to the dictates that are imposed upon us from the top down. And if we create a situation like that for the feds, where they can't uniformly impose anything, what are they going to do? Are they going to invade the countryside? Are they going to send the army in little towns across the country? They can't do it. It's just not practical. And you already see this with how many people can't afford their taxes. And yet you see some raids and you see them trying to hire more federal agents, but you don't see wide scale. You know, it's like half of people that don't file their federal income taxes, and you just don't see mass invasions because it's just not feasible.
Well, I like the particular offices that you've picked out, because obviously you don't have unlimited resources, far from it. So you have to focus on what makes strategic sense rather than spreading yourself ridiculously thin all over the place. Why don't you do something that's winnable? Because not only is it winnable, these are strategic offices where you can actually accomplish something. And while you're accomplishing something, you can be simultaneously advertising the libertarian brand.
Exactly. And that's what we need as a philosophy and as a movement. We don't have too much brand recognition as a party. And if you don't have much brand recognition, you're not going to have much brand trust. And I really think that trust is the key component here that we need to garner throughout society in order for our ideas to flourish. Right now, I truly believe if people are politically engaged, there's actually not much reason for them to listen to us. The only people who are going to listen to us naturally are going to be people who are like at the very high end of the personality trait openness distribution and actually consider and grapple with the ideas and all of that. But the reality of the fact is people who are engaged in politics, they kind of have their friend-enemy distinctions down, and they have their in-group and they have their out-group. And I think we as libertarians, until we can either A, be a threat to these in-groups to destroy them essentially, B, we become a value for them to destroy their enemy, or C, get into a position where we can earn trust, I don't think that there's any reason for them to listen to us. Furthermore, they're certainly not going to trust us with their votes at high-level races. If we as libertarians haven't humbled ourselves and haven't done the work to get into these types of positions where we can actually affect the local community, and we haven't taken that upon ourselves, why should anybody listen to us or trust us with their votes in these very high stakes races like Senate and all of that? So it's on us to kind of realize that our communities are our responsibilities, and then take that responsibility and perhaps humble ourselves that it's not going to be a quick and easy top-down approach of how we decentralize the state or how we roll back the power of the federal branch and all of that. We're going to have to get a little bit more creative, and we're going to have to get a little bit more understanding that this is going to be a long-term project. And I think that is the obvious takeaway from these midterms across the board, whether it's the fact that despite these circumstances, people really just voted the incumbents en masse and or not. That is, to me, the only pathway forward that is viable, at least from a political sense.
Before I go on, let me say a quick thing that will help a lot of you, and you know who you are. If you are in business and you're getting buried by your competition online, then build your brand, your reputation, and your lead flow with digital marketing by Persist SEO, our great sponsor. If you're a small local business, you're trying to compete against large companies in the service industry, increase your visibility with Persist SEO. Or if you have low or no leads coming in on a consistent basis, well, website search engine and conversion optimization can help move the needle to a more prosperous business model for you. If you're tired of cold calling, use your website as a lead generation engine. If you're not showing up for your services on the search engines, then get found with Persist SEO's expert search engine optimization. All you have to do is call 770-580-3736 or visit them at ineedseo.help for a free website audit and consultation. That's 770-580-3736 or ineedseo.help. Now, part of this Operation Decentralized Revolution, I guess you're also doing a series of events?
Yes.
Okay, let's hear about that.
So the Run as Libertarian campaign that I've outlined, that is part one of the Project Decentralization campaign. So this is a 1-2 punch. And like I said, we have to affect culture and we have to be present in the conversations at that local level. So part two of it is what we're calling the Take Human Action Tour. And the Take Human Action Tour is a proposed tour of 8 speaking events featuring all the different stars of our movement. I've got economists from the Mises Institute that are going to be at these events. Our good friends over at the 10th Amendment Center. Michael Reckenwald is very excited to be in this. Scott Horton, Dave Smith. Maybe we're even see Tom Woods at some of these events. You know,
well, you never know. You never know.
You never know. So the idea is that we want to get the stars of the movement out. Then we want to have these conversations out in the public by schools and work with student groups to get them out as well. And talk about all of our favorite things. Political decentralization, war and peace, Austrian economics, gun control. The wokeism and the history of the basket of ideas that we kind of colloquially call wokeism and the history of those ideas. We want to have these conversations and we want to promote it to our audience, but kind of get a cross section of the entire liberty movement at these events and then bring everybody together and try to earn their support with the Libertarian Party. When it comes to the Libertarian Party, I think I bring a very different attitude than has been proposed in the past. I'm a realist. I believe that the Libertarian Party has spent a long time misrepresenting libertarians. I mean, if you're a listener of this show, chances are that you are at least libertarian leaning and you know what I'm talking about. You're probably not a member of the party. You probably have been embarrassed by the party. So we want to fix that and we understand that it is our duty to fix that. And it's with exciting events like this and realistic strategies like what I've already laid out that we want to do this. And hopefully we can start to increase our membership more and more, increase the people who want to run for these offices more and more. And we are going to be coupling, again, live in-person candidate trainings at these events on the Sunday after the events to prepare people as much as possible to go into these offices. And so I'm actually very proud to say that we had set a very modest goal of maybe 100 candidates that we wanted to recruit. And we're also recruiting campaign managers and building out the infrastructure of the party to support those candidates. And we wanted to get maybe 30 of them by the end of the year. Well, we're already at 140 plus candidates and over 60 campaign managers without ever even getting to the tour, which we anticipate is going to be our big recruitment drive. So we could end up with somewhere between 300 and 400 candidates on our maiden journey for this program in 2023. And from there, we can scale up. And there's a lot of ways that you could approach this whole strategy to make it that much more realistic. We're working on a program in Pennsylvania where you can look at the vote totals at all of the municipal elections. And when I say this is realistic, what we have found by looking at this data is that there is more elections than you might think for city council and mayor and school board where there was 50 votes total cast in the entire election. So, I mean, that's getting your friends and your family and knocking a couple doors. We can actually push back from our communities if we do this and with relative little effort. So that's what the events are going to be all about, is bringing the community together, educating the public, educating ourselves, and then funneling into training to take this strategy seriously and essentially wage guerrilla warfare against the state to decentralize them and nullify them.
All right, let me ask the obvious question, the elephant in the room. Why not just vote for local candidates running as Republicans?
Well, I would say that Republicans, by and large, and look, this is another attitude change that I'm attempting to bring to the Libertarian Party. I'm not asking anybody to be a blind partisan for the LP. And if you're a Libertarian, you don't really have a lot of avenues to get what you want politically. And I understand that. We understand that. So if you have a good Republican on your ballot and that's more viable for you, maybe that's what you got to do. And I understand that. But I would also say that by and large, with the exception of, what, 20% of Republicans, the Republicans were just as complicit in the lockdowns as anybody else. The Republicans have been just as complicit in 0% interest rates as anybody else. The inflation that we're seeing right now is in large part to the Trump checks, you know? And there's going to be more inflation from the spending that Biden has done. But as we know through the Cantillon effects, it's not like the inflation hits right away when the money is printed. So we're still going through the printing of yesteryear affecting our price system. So I would say, what have you got to lose? We've already swung back and forth between Republican and Democrat. And yes, there are some Republicans that are better than others. You do have your Thomas Masseys out there. I'm not at all saying that you shouldn't support those people. But I think what has to happen is we as the Libertarian Party and our membership have to work together with liberty-oriented Republicans to the extent that they're out there and apply pressure to the Republicans to be more liberty-oriented so that we can work together and expand liberty as much as possible, because the inflation's out of control and the culture war is white hot and people are focusing on that culture war when our economy is melting down right in front of us. And we're going to be in a position where we're maximally divided as this situation gets worse and worse, and we can't have that. People who are interested in liberty, we really, really need to come together right now as things get worse and worse to push back where we can and how we can. And I'm realistic about that. So if you're going to vote for Republican, you better make sure that they didn't endorse the lockdowns or that they actually did something to push back against the lockdowns, because this is the whole reason why we took over the Libertarian Party. The Libertarian Party that used to exist was not strong on the lockdowns when they needed to be. They were not courageous in the face of the COVID regime where we needed to be. And this is the base of people, Ron Paul libertarians, Rothbard libertarians, Mises Institute libertarians, Tom Woods libertarians, who took over the Libertarian Party in order to do this. So I would say you can make the argument about political reality, but you can't make the argument that we are ideologically and philosophically better than the Republicans. You can't get that with the Republicans. And I actually like what Michael Malice had to say. I live in Pennsylvania. We just elected John Fetterman. This guy can't even talk. And you might scratch your head and say, how is this possible? Well, it's possible because Dr. Oz, who ran as a Republican, he has shown support for trans kids stuff, completely in contravention to his base. And if you're a conservative, you don't know that you're really going to get what you need out of Dr. Oz. Whereas, regardless of John Fetterman's ability to talk or not, you know what you're going to get out of him. And if you're a progressive and you want that state power, he will vote for it. And that's where we're at. That's how bad things are at.
How do people keep up with this program? Do you have a website that lays all this stuff out or the dates or whatever?
Absolutely. So we have two websites. The one specific to Project Decentralized Revolution is projectdecentralizedrevolution.com. And we will be putting the dates as they come up. We're in the part of the process right now where we're working with the hotels and we have the dates picked out. We have the cities picked out. We are lining up the venues right now. And in the coming weeks, we'll be setting those up. So Project Decentralized Revolution to keep up with that and to more generally join the Mises Caucus and keep up with us, takehumanaction.com.
All right. I want to ask you a question not directly related to this plan, but just to your life since the convention in Reno. Could you try to think about what task has been more challenging than you thought it would be, or maybe even something you didn't anticipate that you've had to deal with, and what's been easier than you thought it would be?
Well, one thing that we are moving into is sophisticating our fundraising, and that has been extremely uncomfortable for me. I grew up in pretty humble circumstances and not really used to doing that. But I guess the answer to both of those questions is probably fundraising, because I've been making a lot of phone calls recently and asking for money in a way that I've never done before. This whole project is, for me, is essentially a passion project that's gotten out of control. And everything that I've done, I've learned on the fly. And that's kind of a conversation that I've had with our supporters from the beginning, is that I'm learning with you. You might be going through this and maybe you're new to the party or maybe you're new to politics or all of this stuff. Well, so was I when this all started, and I'm learning with you and we're learning together. So it's been very difficult to ask people for money. But at the same time, when I explain the project, when I explain our approach to the project, and I explain kind of the attitude changes that we're attempting to bring to the Libertarian Party, it's gotten a lot easier because I've gotten a lot of positive support. And the other thing that I've done that's been easy is, or easier than I thought, is trying my hand at lobbying. This is another thing that people can do in their communities that could be very powerful. My wife had sent me a text that a Republican state house rep, now this is a Republican that I would support, a Republican state house rep named Tracy Pennycuick had introduced a bill to have privately funded psilocybin or mushroom studies here in Pennsylvania. And she was doing that because she's a combat veteran. She cares a lot about veterans' issues. And turns out psilocybin combined with therapy has unprecedented results in treatment-resistant addiction and PTSD and a lot of things that kind of affect the veteran community. So as soon as I saw that, I called her office the next day. And within 2 weeks, I was in her office having a meeting with her. And she was very supportive of not just the psilocybin bill, but ending the drug war generally. So then once I realized that this was a veteran issue for her, I pitched her on the Defend the Guard bill. And if for any of your audience that doesn't know, that's another website, bringourtroopshome.us. It's a fantastic organization that has created this Defend the Guard bill, which would essentially make it so that your National Guard in your state cannot go overseas without an explicit declaration of war from the federal government. And so when I showed her this, she point blank said, yeah, I will introduce that in the next session. Well, this woman in these midterms just got elected from state Congress to state Senate. So now I'm going to have an ally in the state Senate. And I have a follow-up meeting with her on December 13th to discuss this and discuss other issues. So you never know, like if you get involved locally, you really don't know what could happen. We tend to think that everything is dark and gloomy and we focus on the news and we focus on the results that we don't get when we have to focus on action. And when you have organic conversations, you might be shocked at what you find, because I have had that happen to me multiple times.
I know you know this all too well, but a lot of listeners might not. There are people out there who don't care for you or for the rest of us who believe that the Mises Caucus is a kind of cult. And you're our cult leader, and we just follow you without question. And it's so dumb and ridiculous. Nobody thinks that way. It's that you can tell just from this podcast episode that you're full of zeal, energy, and ideas. And I'm not. So therefore, it's a great division of labor. The position that requires zeal and energy and ideas is occupied by somebody who has an awful lot of all of those things. And that's it. It's that you listen to somebody who's thought this through at this depth, as you have, is again, plainly evident from this conversation. That's why we follow you, because you are a genuine leader on stuff like this. You've thought it all through. You've come up with strategies and you've come up with this Project Decentralized Revolution. Why would we say, no, we don't, to heck with that guy? I support you because I agree with you, not because you cast some bizarre spell over us and we're held in an unbreakable trance. It's just because you deliver the goods, because you think, you come up with great ideas, you're full of devotion to the cause. I mean, you have all the qualities we would want. So that's why we're supporting you. Okay, there's no hypnotism involved.
Well, I appreciate that. And another thing I'm very proud of is I'm not seeking to be a figure, so to speak. The brand of the Mises Caucus has far outpaced the recognition that I have. And that's something I actually rather enjoy my position as kind of the administrator manager type, and not the, I would actually hate your job of being the consistent messenger and the pressure that comes along with that. And I'm here because of you, Tom. You know, I'm here because of Ron Paul. I'm here because of the Mises Institute. I'm here because of Rothbard and Mises and the Austrian School. And a quote from, oh God, I forget the guy's name that founded the Leadership Institute, but he has a great quote, is that you owe it to your philosophy to learn how to win. And the Libertarian Party, and libertarians generally speaking, frankly, have suffered a lot of losses. And we're up against overwhelming odds. And I keep coming back to this idea that we need to humble ourselves. We need to humble ourselves. And we have to understand where we can get the wins, focus on them, and then start to build and scale from there. And if we just put a little faith into that and put a little time into that, maybe stop worrying about the national level so much, we might be surprised at what we find or what we're able to achieve, because that has certainly characterized my entire experience with this project the whole time.
Well, the website, projectdecentralizedrevolution.com. I got that right?
Projectdecentralizedrevolution.com to check out this strategy. And then if you want to just get updates from us and perhaps join the Libertarian Party, takehumanaction.com.
All right. Excellent. Okay. I'll also link to this stuff at tomwoods.com/2245. Thanks, Michael. We appreciate everything you're doing.
Thank you.
All right, that's it for today, everybody. Tomorrow, our old friend Brian McClanahan returns to the show, and we're going to talk about what may be in store for us in 2024. I'll see you then.
Become a smarter libertarian in just 30 minutes a day. Visit tomwoods.com to subscribe to the show for free, and we'll see you next time.
Like the sound of the Tom Woods Show? My audio production is provided by Podsworth Media. Check them out at podsworth.com.